right, so today we're talking with Helen Easley, who happens to be my mother. And Mom, tell me about what it was like. This is the story of not being able to lay in the bed during the day. So let's just talk about that. What was that like for you growing up? Not, you can't go to bed during the day. You got to be up.
Well, I grew up on the farm. And my dad, he had these standards. And around our house, everybody woke up at 5 o'clock, no later than 6. And then you didn't get to have a choice. You had to get up. You had a list of things to do. And in the early morning, I mean, when you have one of 13 children, you got to draw water. You got to fix breakfast. You got to wash dishes. You got to gather eggs. You got to go out to the fields and gather peas and corn and butter beans and okra and big old 5-bushel baskets of these things. And I started doing this when I was 5 years old.
So you're 5 years old and you're carrying this heavy vegetables that you picked for 2 hours.
Well, I had a sibling helping me, but we'd have to walk 10 steps and set it down. It was actually kind of funny thinking back on it because we weren't strong enough, but we became stronger because we were using our muscles and we had to do it because we knew if we didn't get it done, when at the end of the day, my dad would check to see if we did what he told us to do. And if we didn't do it, he'd line us up. We all got a switching.
Okay, let's go there. What's a switching?
Oh, you don't want to get a switching, not from my dad. That was not what you wanted. Dad had no mercy. It was not a matter of but this or but that. Dad would just say,
take the switch to the butt.
I told you to do this. And he would go out in the yard, and we'd have these peach trees out there. And he would cut off one of those little peach tree limbs, and you're talking about dancing a tune. It hurt, and you would have red whelps on your legs. You didn't want but one of those. You realized if you didn't get your job done, you better get somebody to help you, and you would, because you knew you didn't want to face Daddy.
Yeah,
the fear of a parent does instill good things in a child. When a child fears and respects a parent, it helps a child to have respect, because even though my dad didn't do it the perfect way, but my dad knew that keep us busy. And as long as we were busy, it took all of us doing what had to be done to keep the family going, to keep things smooth so that it didn't fall on one person. Dad wouldn't let that happen. He'd leave and go out and work all day long at a lumber mill. And he had these hired help. They'd be cutting down these logs and bringing them in there. And he'd be overseeing these people to dress this lumber for people that wanted to build some kind of commercial building or house somewhere. And he'd work all day long at that and then come home. And he wouldn't get home till like 6 or 7 o'clock at night. And after working all day like that, all he wanted to do is just wash up and come inside and sit down to eat and rest. Well, then he had all of us around him. My dad would even then go out in the field, and he would play ball with us. He'd throw the ball. We'd throw horseshoes. We'd pitch horseshoes. My dad, he was one that was always playing with us kids. I never remember my mother doing that with us, but Daddy did.
How many kids?
There was 13 of us. There was 6 boys and 7 girls.
Wow. All right. Before we hit record, you mentioned something about squash. You hated picking squash. Why'd you hate squash?
Now, actually, well, squash has got this fuzzy, tight, prickly thing on the vines. And when you start to try to get into the vine, you know, your arms are going to be touched with all that. So you learn to wear long sleeves because it'd rub up against your skin. It'd get irritated. Okra was the same way. Okra, I hated okra because it would sting, and you had to go wash off your hands and arms after you cut okra because it'd just be all over you. Those were the kinds of things that I never really liked, but we didn't have a choice. We had to do it. Corn wasn't much different. It wasn't quite as bad, but to pull corn off a stalk, you had to be pretty strong actually to do that. I look back at that and I think some of the chores that was given to me, I don't think I was actually old enough to know, but I had older siblings that were doing it, so I'd just go along and do it with them.
You mentioned picking wild plums. Where would you find those?
Out in the woods. We'd go walking out in the woods in the springtime. Dad had a way of, he would take us on walks in the woods and he would see these plum trees at different places and he would mark them. And then he would take us back in the woods and we would, when they would bloom, we would know it'd be so many weeks before it'd have fruit. And then we'd go back in the woods and pick all those plums and we'd bring them home. We'd wash them. Mother would make plum jelly out of it.
Drawing water. Describe what that was like. From going outside to bringing it in, all the steps. What did it take to draw water?
Well, in our home, we didn't have an indoor bathroom. So on the back porch, that was called the, there was, we set two buckets out there and a wash pan. So that's where you'd wash up. And the well was out about 30, 40 feet from the house. So you would have to take your buckets out to the well. And the well itself would have a rope that was on this, a pulley, and it would wind over this barrel-like thing. So you'd have to let the bucket down in the water, and then you would have to draw it back up.
About how far down was the water, you think?
It'd be 30, 40 feet.
Oh, wow. That's pretty
far. So it would take you 3 or 4 minutes to draw two buckets of water, but it was spring water. So it was always so fresh and cold. Mm. And so that was also how we drew up our bath water. We had these number 8 tubs where we'd set them out in the sunshine. About midday, we'd go out there and draw up our water and put it in those tubs. And during the summer, that's the way we'd take baths. Wintertime, we'd have to heat it up inside on a wood stove.
So you'd take the water, heat it up on the stove, and then pour it in the tub outside?
No, we would bring the tub inside in the wintertime.
Okay. Huh.
But we'd all take a bath out of the same water.
Yeah. so that's probably not the cleanest water if everybody's in there.
If you could see how dirty we were, you'd kind of laugh because it was like the Beverly Hillbillies.
That's pretty good. Okay, so let's talk about a typical day at the age of, from 5 to 10. What was a typical day?
During the school year. Back then, you went to school. You would start school in the summer, in July. Uh-huh. And you would go like six or eight weeks to school. And then school would let out because it'd be time to pick cotton. And so school would totally close and there'd be 8 weeks to where all the families were needed to go out in the fields and pick the cotton and pull the corn. So you'd have about 6 or 8 weeks there where you were out harvesting cotton, corn, all your dried beans and peas and things that you'd have store up seeds, popcorn. We grew our own popcorn. That was always a lot of fun. But during that morning would start out. Like in the summer, it'd be hot. Oh, and we'd have to get dressed. School bus come along. We'd catch the bus. We'd go to school. Then we'd get home. And when we'd get home in the afternoon, we had to do our homework. And then we had chores we had to do. And chores for us girls was we had to gather eggs. We had to bring in wood for the stove. We had to go to the smokehouse and get meat and vegetables that Mother was going to be using for the next day for the meal. We would normally have to cook cornbread. And then we'd help set the table. And then after we get all that done, we'd eat, and then we had to do all the dishes. And then one would wash, one would rinse, and one would dry. And we had to put them all away because we didn't have any place to stack them. So we'd have to put them all back in the cabinets and clean up, sweep the floor. We'd get all that done. And by then, it'd be dark, and we'd go to bed by 7:30, 8 o'clock.
How many people slept in the bed with you?
That's kind of funny because we were talking about this at our last family gathering. And one time I had my twin sisters that slept on one end and myself and another sister slept on the other side on a full size bed. So there were 4 of us in one bed, but 2 would sleep at the bottom at the foot of the bed. The other 2 would sleep at the head of the bed. That was kind of funny, but we were all little, you know, we did that up until we were about probably 4 or 5 years old. Then after you got older than that, then you'd sleep in the bed with one other person. And eventually you'd get to where you had your own half bed. But that didn't come for a while. I remember when I was little, my dad would let us fall asleep in the bed with him. And he would tell us bedtime stories. And he would just make up these stories and just laying there listening to the sound of his voice. It was always so sweet. And I'd just fall asleep right away. But we were talking about some of the different type stories he would make up, and they were always so interesting. And it kind of gave me the same kind of thing for being able to just make up stories and tell them to children. And, you know, it's just kind of words that you put together with some kind of a picture of what, you know, somebody's doing. And my dad always loved animals, so he was always including stories that had something to do with birds or something about bees or animals, dogs or cats. And he always made them really sweet and, you know, appropriate for us as kids. And every once in a while, he'd make it one be kind of scary, but it wouldn't be anything about a monster. It'd be about a bear or tiger or something like that.
I've heard you in the past talk about a name, and I'm going to bring it up, and you're probably going to laugh, but I don't know the whole story, so I was hoping you'd tell it now, but who is Juki?
Well, my dad, he had a way of giving everybody a nickname. I don't know where he got that from, but all the kids had nicknames, but my sister Jeanette ended up with the nickname Juki. But it was because she had a pretend playmate, and she always called that little playmate Juki because Juki was always getting into trouble. And I don't know if that stemmed from something that was going on with her, and that Daddy would see her do something and he'd say, well, that looks like Juki to me. And he, you know, okay, Juki, you need to do this. And so when Jeanette created her playmate that was invisible, we all would just laugh. We all just started calling her Juki. And it was just really funny because some of the things when we would play outside, we'd make our own little playhouses and we would play for hours. Just we'd take a hoe and clear off a place, and we'd go around and look for all these cans and boards and different colors of rocks and dirt and stuff. And we'd pretend that we had our own little kitchen. And so then we'd invite our friends. And every time Jeanette would invite Juki, well, Juki would come in and tear everything up. And so we didn't like Juki. So we'd tell her we didn't want her to come because every time she came, she would tear up our house. And we just didn't like Juki. So Juki got blind with a lot of stuff that she didn't actually do. But it was just it was the way we played. I guess when you are little like that growing up, you do have an imagination, and sometimes it can be good and positive, and at other times it can be negative. But in our case, as we grew older, we learned to laugh about it because we were real creative as kids. We didn't have pen and paper and crayons and stuff like that, and we didn't have toys galore because we made our own toys out of the things that we had around us. And I remember one time my dad took this stick and he took an old tobacco can and he cut it open and then he made it into a U-shape and nailed it into the stick. And we took that and we used it to push this ring around in the yard, and Daddy would time us to see how long we could keep that ring up. And we would go all over the yard just running and playing and laughing. And one day we had this big old barrel, and we turned it over and we decided we were going to see if we could stand up on it and walk on it. And we were barefooted. So we learned how to stand up on that barrel and walk, pushing that barrel underneath our feet. And we would go all over the yard.
Probably not the safest thing, but
no, I mean, but not one time did we fall off and break our arm or even get hurt. Amazing. That's another thing. We used to crawl up in the tops of these pine trees that would be slender and thin. And we'd go all the way to the top of them and bend over all the way to the ground and let go and jump out. And how we kept from getting hurt, I don't know, but we didn't.
Wow.
It's amazing.
That sounds like a lot of fun, though.
It was a lot of fun. That's how we entertained ourselves.
Tell me about a time you got in trouble.
Oh, well, there was a lot of those times, but one I remember specifically. My dad had sent me out to go get some wood for the stove, and I went out there and I decided I would just play. And I didn't want to get the wood. And I guess I just actually, I don't know, maybe as a little kid, I just forgot about it or I didn't want to do it. I don't know. But anyway, I was out there playing under the apple tree and the wood was stacked near there. But instead of me going and getting the wood and bringing it back inside, I just got out there and started playing. Well, about this time, out comes one of my older brothers, and he's standing there, "What are you doing out here?" And he had a switch in his hand. He just started spanking me. And he got the wood and he brought it back inside the house. I get inside the house and Dad said, "Well, you've already had your switching. So the next time I send you out to get the wood, just don't forget you're going out to pick up wood and bring it back into the house. Don't stop and play."
Oh, well, sounds like he was pretty reasonable about it then.
No? He was. Dad was never really, to me, Dad was never mean. My older brothers say that he was very mean to them because I've had conversations with them when they talk about different things that Dad would say and do when they were little that Dad never did. To me, as a But he had six boys and then one daughter and then another son. And then I was the second daughter. Well, he and Betty never really bonded, but Dad and I did bond. And my nickname was Sunshine. And I remember my daddy taking me with him to so many places. And like he'd in the evening after he'd get home from work, he would walk down to the fields, and he would always ask me if I wanted to go with him. And I remember my daddy walking along, talking to me and taking his hand and petting me on top of the head. I was a cute little girl because I had real pretty, long, curly blonde hair, and I had cute little features. I was really a cute little girl when I was little. And all my brothers and sisters were cute, but I had that little cuteness about me that I think Daddy just, I kind of was his favorite or one of his favorite. I think I probably was his favorite girl because I remember Daddy doing things for me that the other girls don't remember Daddy doing at all. And I kind of wonder sometimes, you know, if that was because I was the second daughter and he just had that bond with me.
I was a little bit older and I had several kids under his belt, and
that's true. Figured
he could loosen up a little bit. Or
Daddy, he was always so good to play with us kids, though, and he would play with all of us. I mean, we had enough that we could have our own ball team. So we would go out in the field and we would play ball for hours. And if we were shelling peas, Daddy was right there sitting there with us doing the same thing we were doing. And he would tell us stories about when he was a little boy and different things he would get into. And his dad died when he was little. He was only 7 years old when his father died. And so he grew up with a stepfather, and his stepfather was really mean. I mean, he was really mean to them. And so he'd tell stories about how he and his brothers would come up with these pranks because they'd get mad at him and they'd just say, "We're going to get even with you." And so some of the things they would do was like pretty clever, because once they were having to put up this fencing around this property and they knew that there was a hornet's nest down in this certain area. It was hornets. So they decided they would build the fence along that way. So they knew when they got down there, they could throw something into that hornet's nest once their stepfather got underneath it and the hornets would get all over him. And so they did things like that. I mean, they would go off and laugh about it because they think, you know, you're mean to us. So that was their way of saying, "We're going to get even with you." But, you know, it wasn't really, I don't think, a vindictive thing to like really be mean, but it was their way of saying, you know, you kind of get what you hand out or dish out, because Daddy had hard. By the time he was 14 years old, he had hitchhiked and caught a train and went all the way out to Texas.
Oh, wow.
And went out to an uncle's
house. So he
house.
Went to Texas from Mississippi.
Yeah.
That's a long way.
Yeah, 14 years old, he did that.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah, he stayed out there until he was 17. And then when he was 17 years old, he came back to Mississippi. He ended up down in southern Mississippi.
What part of Texas?
I don't really remember exactly. Hmm. I don't remember right now. I don't remember. I'll have to ask one of my older siblings, because I can't remember where he ran out there.
Did you ever feel or think or know that you were poor growing up?
No, because everybody in our county was in the same situation. There were only a few kids that had an exception, and even they didn't have very much. But there were a couple. I don't know, I can think of two or three kids right off where both parents worked in the factories or they had better jobs. But both of the parents, dad and the mom, worked, and they'd had a better house and a little nicer clothes. But there were so many of us in the same situation that the ones that did have more, they were the exception as they didn't fit in with the rest of us because they didn't have the lifestyle we had. So most of the time, it was the kids that were all in the same, had the same lifestyle and background that stuck together. And we were the ones that were playing all the sports because we got to go outside and we were very athletic. So I played on a girls' basketball team. I played on a girls' volleyball team. I was a cheerleader. And I know that all those things was because I was just active and out, you know, and I just had the skills. The girls that lived in the city, they didn't play basketball. They didn't know how to play basketball. So, you know, there were differences there, but I don't know. Growing up, I don't ever remember having anybody say to me that I was poor. You know, I remember people saying when we would get on the bus, because when the bus would stop, there would be like six or eight of us get on the bus at the same time. And I remember one time this guy said, well, here comes our, I think he said, here comes a heel, our heel load. And then they'd make little cracks like, well, the bus is full now, you know, and stuff like that. But at the time, we were just little kids, so we just laugh about it. You know, I never really remember it striking me as something that was painful. I think the most painful thing.
You think he meant it in a mean way? Or?
Oh, they meant it in a way just to laugh and poke fun at us, because we were the, I mean, like you have six or eight kids get on at one stop. Man, and we was usually close to the last stop on the route. So sometimes we didn't even get to sit down because the bus would be so full of kids that we'd have to stand up to ride. And, you know, they talk about laws and seatbelts. And yeah, we'd stand up on the school bus to ride the last few miles to get to school. And, you know, back then we could all get in the car and five of us could be in the back seat and we'd be going around these curves and just gravel roads with dust flying everywhere. And, you know, the kids would be flying all over the back seat. And, you know, back then nobody thought anything about it. It was not anything that, you know, anybody would say, well, you got to have on a seatbelt, you know, which, you know, I'm thankful that we have some changes, but some of the changes we have today, I think are totally unnecessary. In some ways, I don't necessarily think that the government should set the guidelines for how a parent oversees a child. I think Child Protective Services and some of these things have really gotten out of hand. I know that
some parents that, you know, they neglect or don't look out for their kids.
Well, that's true. I mean, we grew up on the farm. Mother, daddy didn't know where we were at all times.
Yeah, but they weren't neglecting you. I mean,
no, they didn't. They never neglected us. And I never had to be concerned about my mom and dad not being there for me. I never had to be concerned that I wasn't going to have a father and a mother that raised me. Mm-hmm. My father never would have bailed on us. And that's saying a lot. My mother never would have either. Although I'm sure at times she wished she could. Because she never had an outlet for her own talents. However, I remember Mother was very creative when it came to sewing and cooking and, you know, and just making things from, she would take fabric and make quilts. And this would be cutting up old dresses and pants and stuff that the kids of outgrown would be what we call rags. And Mother would take them and wash them and iron them. And then she'd take them and cut them up into quilt pieces, and she'd make quilts or curtains or tablecloth or, you know, that's...
She didn't let stuff waste.
No, you couldn't. Nobody could back then. I mean, if we had leftover vegetables, we didn't throw them away. We put them in the refrigerator the next day. Mother put them all together and added some onion and potatoes, and we had soup.
Yep.
You know, that makes Mother would always make cornbread. She'd always make biscuits every day. Every morning we had homemade biscuits. Every evening we had cornmeal. We'd have cornbread. So, you know, it was not, everybody ate just about the same way, but we were talking about kids that want all this organic stuff. We kind of laugh now because everything we had was organic. So I think that does contribute a lot to having good health, because here I am 68 and I'm still not on any prescription drugs.
Yeah, that's pretty
amazing.
I
don't have high blood pressure. I don't have high cholesterol. I'm not a diabetic. I'm not even close to that. You know, now that could change in another 2 years, but, you know, at 67, I'll be 68 in November. I think that's a lot of years to be able to say, still have, you know, my bones. I'm thankful I've never had a broken bone ever in my life.
Wow. Let's talk about clothes. So I'm guessing you didn't have a lot of outfits, probably not a lot of pairs of shoes. So what was that like growing up?
Well, it was kind of funny. Daddy would take us to this one store in town, and I forget the man's name. I want to say it was Mr. Crow. Anyway, the man owned what they called a mercantile store, where he had dry goods, and then he'd have shoes and a few fabrics and
stuff. About what year was this, you think?
It would be 1955, 56, 57, because I remember first grade, Daddy took us all there at one time. And this guy would measure our feet, and Dad would not let us pick out our shoes. He would pick our shoes. But he would pick an all-leather shoe with an all-leather sole, and it would be what back then was called black Oxford shoes. They were black and white, nice-looking shoes. You would get one pair. Well, you know kids' feet grow during the year, so if we didn't fit into the one that was older than us, if they didn't outgrow their shoes, if somebody didn't give us a pair of shoes, then we still had... We're stuck with that one pair of shoes. Sometimes the sole would wear out. Sometimes we'd cut cardboard and put it in the bottom of the shoe to try to make it last longer. Sometimes the shoestrings would break and we'd have to just find some kind of rag and tear it up and make shoestrings out of it.
No kidding.
Yeah. Sometimes we would have people give us things occasionally, but not very often because nobody had anything. So in spring, nobody wore shoes. You went barefooted.
Even to school?
Yeah. You didn't wear shoes to school. Nobody had shoes because nobody had the money. Dad put those shoes on credit and he'd pay it. He would pay it off over a period of time. But, you know, when you're buying shoes for five or six kids at one time, back then, even, I don't know how much it cost, maybe $6 or $8. I don't know. I don't remember how much they cost, but they were always good shoes, but they always wore out too. But in the spring, we never wore shoes because
you've worn them out.
Yeah, we'd worn them out or they'd outgrown them or whatever. And they're too hot on our feet. Even to this day, I don't like to wear enclosed shoes in the spring because my feet get hot and I don't like, I don't have a pair of shoes that I put on that's got closed toes, the enclosed toe shoe that I wear it in the spring or summer. And I know that has to do with when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I've always been like this. And one day I was thinking about it and I thought, that's because you never wore shoes when it came spring and summer. And so I see my little grandson now, he's 4 and he can just run around barefooted everywhere and he doesn't even bother his feet. And I my feet are so tender now that when I go to walk across gravel, I can't hardly do it. But he can just walk across it like this is just nothing. It doesn't bother him. Well, that's the way my feet were back then. They were tough to things like that. So it didn't bother you. You didn't think anything about it.
No, that was normal.
Yeah, it was just normal.
Wow. Hey, imagine kids going to school now with no shoes. Like that would be unacceptable for this day and age. You know, yeah. So nobody would do that.
Clothes. We did have some people that would give us clothes that would get passed down to us. But most of the time, mother would make something. And back then, our flower sacks were printed. They were a real pretty cotton, 100% cotton fabric. And it would look something like what is called calico fabric now. Mm-hmm. So mother would take those flower sacks and she would save them and she'd wash them and iron them. And then she would make our dresses out of those flower sacks.
So your dresses were flower sacks.
And my brother's shorts and stuff were made out of, back then you could buy a fabric that looked similar to burlap, but it was a little bit softer than that. And it was, and then she would buy this denim jean stuff that was stiff, but she would make them their shorts. And
wow.
They didn't wear shirts in the around the house. They just had their shorts that they wore, but she just put elastic in the waist. And, you know, that's what they wore. And I don't ever remember seeing my brothers wear shirts around the house back then. They were almost always bare back. T-shirts. No, they didn't really.
Barefoot with those
shirts.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, if you've ever seen Beverly Hillbillies, it was about like that. There was one called Cheaper by the Dozen, and we used to laugh and laugh about. But I think that movie was made back in the early 1960s or maybe late 1950s. But that movie really makes me think a lot of my childhood because of the way they were always all over the place, climbing out the windows. And I'm sure we did the same thing because we didn't have any air conditioning. You know, we just had like a floor fan, what they call a box fan. And sometimes we didn't even have that. So, when it would get hot, it was hot. So we would raise the windows at night. And, we just learned to manage. Nobody else had it. So we didn't really think much about it. We didn't have a lot of ice. You know, back then, you know, your well water was cold because it was spring water. But as far as actually having ice, frozen ice, we didn't have frozen ice. We had a refrigerator, but, you know, I don't ever remember not having a refrigerator. But there were, you know, there's things was just so different back then than it is now that it makes it easier to deal with some things for me, whereas some people wouldn't be able to cope with it at all. It's a lot easier for me to, you know, look at life and say, you know, there could be worse things.
When you're talking about your mom sewing those clothes, it made me think of Julie Andrews and Sound of Music, where she takes those curtains and makes the clothes for the kids, the play clothes. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, that was
taking
creative.
Burlap sacks or sacks and turning them into dresses. It's kind of thrifty and kind of cool.
I have some pictures of me in my clothes, and they were cute. I mean, yeah. You know, they just, you could tell they were handmade, but they weren't ugly, you know, and they were clean because mother was always really she taught us a lot about being clean. Even though we lived out and we ran and played and got dirty, she still would, you know, have us wash our hands before we eat. And we, every night we had to wash our hands and feet. And, you know, she was real good about teaching us to be conscientious of things like that.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like that part was left out. It wasn't. We had order in our day. You know, Dad, we never prayed at the table or anything like that. My mother always was the one that talked about God, but Dad never prayed or anything. But he had order because when we would go to sit down for a meal, he would have us sit down and put our hands in our lap, you know, and wait until we were served our food. And then we got to all start eating at the same time. He, you know, Dad did a lot for setting that, putting that in place, is I guess the best way to say that. And Mother was good about following up with it. But my father taught us a lot about life and the values of keeping your word. And he was real big about that. If he said, if you tell someone you're going to do something, you need to make sure you do that, or you need to let them know why you cannot do that. And Dad was always really good about making sure that he was on time. And he'd said, try to be early or try to be on time. He said, because when people are making an appointment with you, you know, it's their time too. And he said, so you need to remember that you're supposed to respect them. My father was had a really good heart. He's always wanted to share everything he had. Even though we were poor, he had his hired help and they would come to our house to pick up their money. Because Daddy would go to the bank on Friday evenings and he would get money. And then on Saturday, they would walk or ride to our house. And Dad would have us go down in the field and pick a bag of tomatoes or whatever we had the most of. And he'd say, now go down there and pick enough for three people. Because he'd know there'd be three people coming the next day to pick up their money. And so he wouldn't just have us give, he wouldn't just have the envelope with their money. He would have a bag of tomatoes or a bag of peas or whatever we had. He would always have us gather it so that he could put it in different bags. And he would always share. If we had watermelons, he'd pick an extra watermelon and bring it up there so they could have a watermelon. So he wouldn't just give them their paycheck. He'd always give them something extra.
That's nice.
And I think that was really, you know, it showed a mark of care. My dad cared about people. I mean, he definitely had his downside of way he made decisions to do things, but he also had a good heart about himself, and he had empathy for other people.
Tell me, and I'm talking about food, snacks. Tell me, what was a treat when you were little?
That is so funny. We'd come home from school. We would be so hungry. A treat for us was we'd go inside the house, and we'd take flour and milk, if we had milk, or flour and water, and we'd stir up flour and water and make what we called hoe cakes. And my dad would buy these big old quart or gallon, half gallon jars of this, they called it molasses or syrup. It was sorghum syrup.
Is that kind of like pancake syrup?
Yeah, or? It'd be like, well, it'd just be syrup. It's similar to pancake syrup, but it's thicker. Okay. So we'd fry up these little pancakes made out of that bread, and we would put that syrup on top of it. That was a snack. Or in the spring and summer when we had fruit, we could have sometimes we had peaches, sometimes we had strawberries, sometimes we had apples.
Those are watermelon.
Pear, watermelon.
Yeah.
And we'd always pick berries, and when we were picking them, we would eat them. You know, we never had blueberries, but we had huckleberries, and we used to pick huckleberries. They were real tiny, but they really did make good jelly. My mother knew how to make all kinds of jams and jellies from muscadines, and these are wild vines that grow out in the woods, and, you know, we would find them and pick the fruit off from them and bring them home, and Mother would make muscadine jelly. I have actually two little pints of muscadine jelly that my brother made from vines that were growing on his property, and when I was home back in July, he gave me two little pints of that muscadine jelly.
What about drinks? Like you talk about spring water. Did you just always drink water? Did you ever have Coke? Did you ever have, what were some drinks that you'd have that might not be water?
The only thing we ever had besides water was Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid, okay.
Kool-Aid, because it was cheap. Oh, man, we'd get the, well, this is, we never would buy it, okay? So
really?
I forgot, I left this out. This was really interesting. We lived out in a rural area, so back then they had what they called a peddler. where it would be a man that drove an old school bus that he had turned into a little grocery store.
Oh, interesting.
And so once a week, he would come by the house. And so one time, I guess he felt sorry for us because he knew there were so many of us. He had this root beer and lime, lemon lime Kool-Aid that he just gave us. And I guess he couldn't sell those flavors. And it was getting old. So he just gave it to us. And so we would make up a big gallon jug of that root beer Kool-Aid. And we thought that was a grandest
thing. Did you have
thing.
Sugar to put in it?
No. We didn't have any sugar.
So it was really just the Kool-Aid.
Just the Kool-Aid.
Powder and water.
No, I mean, it was just, that's it. No, the rest of it was water. Water and more water.
Well, I can't imagine that tasted real good.
So it was not the worst, but I guess if you've never had it,
yeah.
And, you know, as a little kid,
that's hilarious.
You'll try anything. So we just, and now in the wintertime when it was snow, Dad would make sure we had sugar and cream, mm-hmm. and we'd make homemade ice cream from the snow.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. And, you know, Dad would always take us out in the woods to cut down our Christmas tree. He would look and he would find a cedar, green evergreen cedar tree, and we'd go out with him, and he'd take us all with him. He didn't go by himself. He wanted us to go with him, and we'd go out in the woods and he'd cut it down. We'd all drag it back. And then the only thing we had to decorate it with is we would string popcorn, and we would make these little loops out of paper, and we didn't have any lights, but we would do that. And then our Christmas for us was Dad would buy these big boxes of oranges and fruit and candy and nuts, and that was it. We never got presents.
So you just enjoy these fruits and nuts?
Yeah,
and
I mean, we would be so excited.
That was kind of normal.
Yeah, but we would want to go get in the box, and, you know, we didn't get it very much, so we would want to get one or two or three extra and hide them so we'd have one for later. You know how kids are.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Wow. Wow. And he, you know, you didn't need a gift because you made your own toys, and that was normal.
Well, nobody had money to buy things back then. You were doing good to be able to have money for flour, and back then they bought shortening, you know, they didn't, lard's what they called it, and they had coffee. Daddy would buy coffee, ground coffee, and he would buy, what else did he buy? And we grew our own corn, so we would take our own corn and have ground in the cornmeal. So that was about
was that
the only
how you
thing.
Made your popcorn, was from the corn?
No, we grew our own popcorn. No, we regular corn, we had a big cornfield, and so in the fall when it would dry, there would be certain rows Daddy would leave for it to dry. And then when it would dry, we would pull it, and then we'd shuck it. And then he would take that corn, that dry corn, up to the gristmill, and they would grind it into cornmeal.
Okay.
They had a big old stone up there, and you'd pay them 50 cents or something to grind up 50 pounds or something. And that cornmeal would be what we'd have for the winter. And Daddy, he knew how much it would take. So he would like save enough that he'd come back with four or five big old bags of that cornmeal, and that would be what would last us all winter long.
So you just make it, ration it out. And,
yeah.
Wow. Let's talk about the outhouse. So you didn't have indoor plumbing.
Oh, well, that was really crazy.
I've never had to use an outhouse. I've used portalettes or whatever, but I can't imagine.
Well, Sears and Roebuck was really good about printing these huge thick catalogs, so that's what we use for toilet paper.
All right.
And people would throw those catalogs away because, I mean, some people would look at them, but after they'd get a new one, they'd throw them away. So we would always collect them. And so that's what we use, is either
so
that
a page
or paper.
Out of
yeah.
The catalog.
Yeah, rip a sheet
and that
out
was
of the catalog.
Basically toilet paper.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's only, we never had toilet paper.
Was that?
Well, and I guess a lot of times, I mean, you just, you know, only time you use that is if you did number two.
Sure.
You didn't have any use for it other than that. But that was never something that I can't say that I ever liked that. I don't really have any stories about it. I know we did it, but it wasn't something that we thought anything about, because like I said earlier.
So what happens in the middle of the night if you got to get up and go to the bathroom?
Well, you didn't, because you would go before you went to bed. And, you know, my grandmother who lived with us at one time, she had what they called a little.
Was that on your mom or your dad's son?
My dad's mother. It was okay. My grandmother. Well, she had, her last name was Davis. It was my grandmother Hill, but she had remarried to Mr. Davis. And so Grandmother Davis, she had what they called a night chamber, which was a little pot that she had a lid on. So if she got up in that, that's what she used. But You know, I don't even remember doing that as a kid. I would always go to the outhouse before I went to bed, and, you know, then I'd get up and go the next morning.
When was the first time in your life you had indoor plumbing where you had like a toilet that you could flush?
Oh, goodness. I have to think long and hard about that, Jared. Not until after graduating from high school.
Interesting.
So 1968, I graduated from high school. And, yeah, I was 17 years old when I went to live with my brother.
And he had a
and he had indoor plumbing.
What year was that, you think?
1968.
Wow. That's interesting. Where did the name Helen come from?
You know, I really don't know. I never asked my mother about that. I don't know who I was named after.
Hmm. Helen Jane Hill. That's your maiden name.
It is.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun. I've enjoyed hearing some of these stories. You got another one for me?
I love the way my dad used to pitch horseshoes. He loved doing that. He was good with it, too. But he also taught me how to practice so that my last memory with my father was at our family reunion. And we always played games. And so he and I decided to team up with my sister and her husband. We were going to pitch horseshoes. And Dad and I won. And I remember he and I laughing and hugging each other. And that was in June. And the next month he died. That was 1989. It was the year.
No, that's not right, because he passed away before I was born.
What year were you born, Jerry?
78.
Okay, it was 1978, because he died the next year. You were 9 months old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate. I would have enjoyed meeting him.
Yeah, he was quite a character.
Let's talk about, like, world events, like landing on the moon, stuff like that. Like, was that when you were older? I guess that was when you were older.
The main event that I can remember when I was in high school is when Kennedy was assassinated.
So you're in high school
in Texas.
Then.
Yeah, I was in high school then.
How did you find out about that?
Oh, somebody came running out of one of the classrooms and said they'd heard it on the radio. And there were kids walking down the street. We were out sitting on a bench. And there were some teachers that gathered out there to talk and said that Kennedy had just gotten shot. And I remember thinking, oh, it struck me as being a time of sadness, even though it was a president. We lived out in a rural area. I don't ever even remember seeing him on TV. Maybe once or twice we did have television, but I don't remember very much about him as a person. But I remember how that felt hearing that news, knowing that he was the president of the United States. And it did have an impact on me.
What about the landing on the moon?
You know, I can't really. I remember a little bit about that, but not that much, Jared.
Hmm. I mean, that was a pretty big deal. So.
I can remember Glenn Ford. Was he the first one that did that?
Gerald. Oh, you're talking about Neil Armstrong.
Yeah, Neil Armstrong. No. Who was? No. Was it Buzz, in Ford's administration when they did that?
Oh, well, I'd have to go look.
I'd have to look that up. I don't remember.
That's probably
Neil
true.
Armstrong was the one that was in the spaceship, right?
Well, he's the first person on the moon.
Yeah, okay.
Well, okay, so that's interesting about hearing about those stories. There's one other thing I was going to ask you about. My mind just went blank. Let's see. I can remember. You were telling that story and made me think. Slipped my mind there. Well, I guess that's okay. Okay, I know what it was. All right, so back in the 50s and 60s, historically, Mississippi was in most perspectives was considered like a pretty racist place. Would you say that was your experience growing up?
No. My father had colored help. My father always told us that everybody had a heart and had the same red blood, and he never would allow us to even make a remark about that. And most of Daddy's hired help were black people. And when our school was integrated. I think that was 1966, because I believe it was my sophomore year in high school when that happened. And I remember not thinking anything about it, because most of the kids that came to our school, we already knew them anyway.
Yeah.
And one of the guys was going to play football. He was a big old guy. And right now I can't recall his name, but he used to always tease me, and just in a fun way, it was a nice thing. It wasn't a make fun of our hatred kind of thing. But I never thought anything about those boys. In fact, when I went back home to my family reunion and I saw my class reunion back in July, I saw one of the girls that went graduated from me, and she came up to me and hugged me, and we just chit chatted, and you know, we talked about how much fun we had together in school, and she was the only black girl that was in our class, but there was never any biases there. We knew her family knew us, and if there was anything like that among other people, they never verbalized it, but it was never a part of our family.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because, you know, unfortunately, that wasn't the case in a lot of places.
That's true.
South, but I'm glad to hear that your family was not like that.
No, my dad would never allow us to be that way. He always told us that we never even thought of talking about it that way. I never even remember occasion when anything was said like that, because it just was not something that we made anything out of it, because they lived around, not in the same area where we lived, but they were in the same county and we knew each other, you know, so.
Yeah, it sounds like you worked together. You helped each other.
Yeah, we never picked cotton together. Now that part, I'd never remember ever being in the cotton field with an interracial group. It was all whites and blacks, you know, whites were in their fields and blacks were in their fields. But they worked just as hard as the white people did to try to take care of their families. They were just as respected as white people were. They could come into town and nobody thought anything about it. You know, I remember going to the ice cream store and they would be there with us and standing in line with us. And we'd get ice cream. They'd get ice cream. You know, we just never thought anything about it. Yeah. In that little town in the county where I grew up in Northeast Mississippi, I don't think there was as much of that in that area down in the South in the Delta. There was probably way far more, but I don't remember any of my friends ever making remarks about stuff like that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, Mom, I'm going to start to cut this short because usually I don't have episodes quite this long, but I really enjoyed hearing the stories and I'm sure we'll talk some more about them. But thank you for being willing to do that.
Oh, you're welcome, Jared.